listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolensky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today, we've got a fundamentals episode for you. So in the past, we've done episodes on JavaScript fundamentals, server-side fundamentals, CSS, HTML and CSS fundamentals. And then today, we're going to be covering sort of the rest of the stuff, the leftovers, things like bash and terminal fundamentals, text editor fundamentals, regex, OS basics, Googling, navigating GitHub. These are just things you should know as a developer, your sort of base skills when you're learning and sort of getting into to web development. With me, as always, is Mr. Scott Tolensky. How are you doing today, Scott?
Oh, you know I'm doing okay. I rooted my phone.
Oh, man.
Or I jailbroke it, so to say. My iOS device. You and I have had discussions about this, about it maybe potentially not being worth it, being a big hassle, about me soft bricking just about every Android phone I've ever owned. Sure enough, when the jailbreak came out for 13.5, I went for it, and it was very easy. Very easy, went nice and quick, and now I have a bunch of Android features that I missed. It's very nice. Like, one of the cool little things I did with it is I fixed the face unlock. Because on Android, face unlock works where that if you hold the face up, it automatically does the swipe up thing for you and just takes you right to your home screen.
Oh.
If you use an iOS device, you know, it's one extra swipe. And it always annoyed me so much because the Pixel phone just did it a little bit nicer and it was so fast and easy. And so that's one of the little tweaks I added, is just take me right to the home screen. I don't need to go do that extra swipe up motion. Why don't you do that? So I've been working on my phone a lot, adding.
When did this come out?
Oh, very recently. And dude, it is easy.
Oh, I'm excited about this.
Yeah. I installed some plugin into Apple Mail. I clicked a button. I clicked another button. I installed an app. And next thing you know, I got access to hundreds of tweaks and I got a whole new icon set and it looks like an entirely different device. And you know me, I'm missing my Android. So like being able to add some of those features back really has improved the experience for me. It seems a little ridiculous, but I've been loving it.
That's great. I'm going to do that as well. I have an old iPhone here that I run jailbreak on and it's not my daily driver, but just a couple little things. I've played around with it for a while and there hadn't been a jailbreak for a while as far as I can tell. Is this one of the jailbreaks where if you reboot it, you have to do it again?
No, I've rebooted. It's been fine. It's been rock solid, man. I haven't had any issues whatsoever. So not to say I won't, considering I just did this, but far so good. Fingers crossed. Everything's been fine. And again, it's on the latest OS. So I didn't lose any cloud functionality or any of my backup stuff or everything's worked fine. I haven't had a single app tell me it can't work.
That's great. Awesome. Well, today we are sponsored by two awesome companies. First one is Sanity, which is your structured content CMS, and Sentry, which is your error and exception tracking. We'll talk about them partway through this episode. Let's get on into it. You want to grab the first fundamental there?
Yeah. So the first fundamental is to simply get better at typing. Believe it or not, we work in an industry where typing is a very important skill. And it's funny that some people never take the time to improve their typing skills. I remember one of the very first things that Courtney and I did, we first started. You might not know, my wife and I met each other at work. We took a programming test against each other a typing test against each other just for fun. And I absolutely thought I was going to crush her because I'm like, I do this, you know, programming stuff. I'm on the computer all day. I'm going to type like crazy. Man, she is good at typing. That is for sure. And so never underestimate just how good your typing skills can be. I would like to know if there's any, I mean, if you just Google typing online, there's like a ton of different sites that will teach you typing. I learned from Mario Teaches Typing, which is a fantastic, that was in the late 90s or early 90s, sorry, not late 90s, where Mario did not complete the level unless you typed correctly. I've pasted in one called keybr.com, which looks like it's pretty good, at least to telling you where to keep your hands, how to get basic skills typing and learn these skills. Trust me, they're well worth investing in that time.
I'm very curious now if I'm a fast typer or not. Should we pause and take a 1 minute typing test to see how many words per minute we are?
We should do that.
Okay, so go to typingtest.com.
Are we doing text or sentences or words?
Let's just do 1 minute text.
1 minute text. Okay.
All right, ready? Go. Oh no. Ah!
Oh, man, that was brutal. Oh.
That was hard. That was hard. Duh. Let's see. How many words per minute did you do?
I don't know if I did very good. I'm on my Keychron K1. I'm blaming it on the keyboard. It's the classic my controller came unplugged argument here. My typing speed was 52 WPM with three errors and an adjusted speed of 49 WPM.
Oh, so I did 61.
Yeah,
but
wow, you killed me.
16 errors. 16. So 45.
Oh, man, look at me. A little bit more accurate.
I was just flying, thinking like it was more about the getting the words done, but I didn't realize. And like, honestly, I feel like I'm faster when I'm typing what I'm thinking, but kind of interesting. I don't know if that's very good or not.
I have no idea. And sure enough, that test probably says, who knows about your programming skills? Because part of the reason why I'm fast at programming is I can do letter, letter, tap, letter, letter, tap, letter, letter, tap, you know, whatever, to get my auto completion going.
And like, you think, oh, it's funny, but even like I've taught boot camps and a lot in the past. And one of the big things we see is like, do people have keyboard skills? Because you just can't keep up. And I think that goes for a lot of kids too, who don't necessarily spend time on keyboards anymore because they're spending all their time on iPads. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know what the future of programming will look like, but I certainly think it's a good skill to have.
What's funny is that we play this game on the Jackbox with my parents. I've talked about this before. We play it like during quarantine here. We've been playing this game. And in one of the games, there's like a typing game. But since you're all on your mobile devices, it's doing basically a typing test on mobile devices. And one of the things that I've learned is that when you type with the auto correction, at least for me, like I use a swipe keyboard.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, me too.
But I use a different keyboard. Yeah. And it remembers your words. So I'm almost like just tapping the auto suggestions over and over and over again, rather than that's how I type fast on the iPhone.
That's true, actually.
Okay. So let's get into the next one, which is bash and terminal skills, because these are skills will really, really, really go a long ways.
Absolutely. And you don't need to be a terminal master like those hacker movies, but there's a couple like sort of basic things you should do is where am I in the terminal? So you know that your computer has a directory structure and you can move among that directory structure with simple commands. And we're not going to list them all here, but just being able to create folders, move into folders, rename folders, delete folders. I would say there's probably like 10 or 15 different commands. Those are all the ones that you need to know in order to sort of move around whatever terminal you're using, whether that's on OS X, using the built-in terminal. On Windows, what's really popular now is WSL, which is Windows Subsystem Linux. I would go as far to say, like, people who are learning terminal on Windows, don't even learn Bash, which is the terminal on Windows, because Windows now gives you a Linux-like terminal on Windows, and that will match anyone who's on OS X, that will match anyone who's on Linux, that will match you SSH into a server. You'll be able to do your very basics there.
And likewise, I have the message here that you should probably learn how to SSH. SSH is one of those skills that I find myself using all the time, whether it's SSHing into my NAS drive or SSHing into a DigitalOcean server or whatever. SSHing allows you to basically jump into the terminal of another computer somewhere else, another server somewhere else, and utilize your command line skills in an entirely different server. That way you don't have to always be relying on visual interfaces to get things done.
I had to do that the other day. I was trying to adjust something on my router and there was no UI for it. The solution is you just SSH into it. If the Linux box at the end of the day, you find the setting you want. I tweaked it, rebooted the thing right from the terminal and you get out. And I was like, man, what a great skill to have is, and if you don't know, actually, I guess Scott just said it, SSH allows you to log into another computer via the command line.
Yeah. And I just, you know, here's a little pro tip for those of you who have a NAS drive. If you're moving things around, like let's say you're moving files around within your NAS drive, SSHing into your drive and using the MV to move things is way endlessly faster than using something like Finder.
Really?
It's like 10 times faster. It is endlessly faster.
Wow. That's a hot tip right there. I saw you tweet about that. Did you end up using rsync to move files or what?
You know what I ended up doing was just connecting directly via Ethernet and then making sure that connection was specifically the Ethernet established connection. And that ended up being faster. than rsync.
Oh, awesome. Other things you should know is very basic Vim skills, because if you're on a server, you SSH into a server, you need to edit a file. There's sort of like two ways to do it. You can either go and grab a GUI program like CyberDuck or Transmit or FileZilla, and that will allow you to visually traverse directory structures. And then you can find your file, right click, open in. And what that does is it actually downloads a local copy and then re-uploads that every single time that you make a change. That's great in a lot of use cases. I do that when I need to like use my editor, like VS Code, but I want to edit the file live on the server. But often you're in there, you just need to like change a .env file. Like you need to config an environmental variable. And if that's the case, you have to use the built-in editors, which is usually VI, Vim, or what's the other one? Nano is on your server. And you don't need to know how to use a whole lot. Just enough to edit a file, move around, paste, save the file, and quit.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because there's so many times where that's the fastest method. Like, oh, you're in this server, whatever. You have to change this thing. Oh, well, how do I do it? Well, okay, just pop into Vim, V, whatever. Change it. Get out.
Exactly. And it's pretty simple. It's just understanding that there are different modes. There's insert mode. And
is that what it's called?
Vim has six modes: normal, visual, insert, command line, select, and execute, or EX. So I only know normal and insert mode and how to get in and out of those two different ones. Years ago, I used Vim for a few months. I knew a lot more, but I've since forgotten it all.
The next one will be knowing about ZSH and or fish, or using something like OhMyZSH with your ZSH. Now, these are some tools that you're going to see a lot of people on maybe YouTube or coding videos that you're watching. You're going to maybe look at their command line and say, hey, why does their command line look all fancy? Maybe it has some interesting colors or emoticons or additional information about GitHub repositories. And these types of tools, I personally have been using OhMyZSH. I was using fish before, but I moved back to OhMyZSH with ZSH. These types of tools can really enhance your experience just by giving you more information. There's all sorts of amazing plugins to either add auto completion or all kinds of things to your command line to just make you feel a little bit more supercharged.
This is not something that you should wait on doing. It may seem like it's only for advanced users to pimp out their shell, but I always tell my beginners to do it because the command line is very confusing. It's often the colors are weird. The fonts are small. You don't know where you are. And if you can just make it look a little bit nicer and get that nice prompt telling you where you are and what the status of your Git repo is, then it makes the terminal a lot less scary. And I have a free course, commandlinepoweruser.com, which is basically my answer to how do you get that cool terminal and what are you doing to move around so quickly?
Yeah, right.
Next up, we have text editors. There's an endless amount of sort of tricks and things you can do in a text editor, but at the very basics, you should get comfortable with the command palette. So most text editors will have a keyboard shortcut that you can hit, and that will bring down a list of different commands. And not every command in your editor will be available via right click or via the context menus. So what you have to do is you have to look for that. And also it's much faster. So pop down the command palette and sort of search for the thing that you want. And also while you're doing that, most text editors will also tell you what the keyboard shortcut is for that. So take a moment to like look up the keyboard shortcut for that. People always ask me like, hey, Wes, like, how do you know remember these keyboard shortcuts, or how do you know what they are? And I'm like, it literally says in the command palette beside the thing that you want to do, and just like look it up.
And there's seven a search times, too.
And the eighth time you'll remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Right. There's a search. Use that search. Find the thing you want to learn. Pick it and just make sure you stick to it. And don't be afraid to change them either. Sometimes people like,
totally,
they'll get to a keyboard shortcut and they'll be like, I'm never going to remember that eight keys I have to press to do this thing. Well, if it's a thing you need to do often, I remap all kinds of keyboard shortcuts, whether or not for me, I even hooked up the like fast console log plugin to use command L. What is command L? I actually don't even remember what command L was originally, but for me, command L now does a console log with a label on it. Hey, that's nice. If I want to do removing a line, it's Command Shift L. Okay, remove a line, Command Shift L. Again, I don't even remember what these basic ones were, but these are things that I do all the time. And your brain is going to work differently than the author of the software's brain, or maybe the whatever popular Vim keyboard shortcuts package is, right? But at the end of the day, these are your keyboard shortcuts, and it doesn't really matter if you set them up the way you want them. It's not like you can't take that stuff with you. So I really configure mine pretty heavily. Another really cool thing is I use this click through to source. We use so many imported files nowadays in JavaScript, right? Where whether it's a React plugin or, you know, a file that references another file that imports another file. If you hold down on Mac, if you hold down the command key and you hover your mouse over a given variable or value, it tells you where that variable or value is defined by just simply clicking on it. And if it's in another file, it will even open up that other file and take you right to the definition. I use this all the time. There's also a go-to definition command, but I honestly, for some reason, my mouse habits die hard for me. So,
yeah, the click through to me is much more used than the go-to command or go-to selector or go-to symbol, they call
it. Very clutch.
I think that is a huge one, because like one of the hardest things when you first learn your program is like, how do I know where to edit this thing, or how do I know where to look what this function does? And of course you can search it, but sometimes you search it and you find every instance of where it's used. So by clicking through, it will then just bring up the definition right for you. That's a good one.
Yeah, very true.
Multiple cursors. This is a huge time saver. Just being able to hold down whatever key it is and click through the multiple cursors, how to assign multiple cursors via the keyboard. On VS Code, it's Command LL. Actually, it's funny that you said Command L, because Command L selects the line, I think, unless I had remapped that. And then Command Shift L will put a cursor on each line. And one little hot tip I have with that is, if you have things in your clipboard, like if you have seven things in your clipboard and then you have seven cursors on your editor and you paste them, it's not going to paste the seven things seven times. It's going to paste the first thing on the first cursor, the second thing on the second cursor, and that superpower. People always ask me about that one.
Yeah,
as
multiple cursors. One of my favorite was a TextMate. Was that the old one?
Yep, that was the first one that had it.
TextMate. That was one of my favorite things about moving to TextMate when I finally did that. I was like, oh wow, what have I been doing? There's also being able to do the find and replace effectively, in addition to find and replacing across files. Both of these are skills, and they might seem very basic on the surface, right? Find, replace, but there's all sorts of additional things that you can add, whether it's matching the case, whether it's replacing the case or preserving the case, as in if you, every time you see the word dolphin, you want to replace it with parakeet, whether or not that's capital P or lowercase p or whatever, you want to be able to make sure that you can find all lowercase versions, all uppercase versions, all ones that are either just a single word or part of another word. And being able to use those skills effectively is very important. And not to mention, this will go along with another one, but there's some regex patterns that you can use too that will make you a really good find and replace master. But that's kind of getting a little bit maybe into a little bit pro skill territory for find and replace. But just being able to really navigate whether whole word, part of word, those type of things in find and replace will make you a much better navigator throughout your programs.
Speaking of regex, you don't need to be a regex master to know fundamentals, but you should know what they are and how to find the one that you need. So a large portion of my career was basically just asking people, how do I match this specific thing? How do I match an email address? How do I match a phone number? How do I match the character ORD dash and then any number of characters and numbers between 4 and 6 long. So just things like that, being able to know that when you need to match something that is not exactly there in JavaScript, meaning you don't have the tools available to you, then a regex is often a good use case for that.
Yeah, right. And I like this site, Regex One. Were you the one who recommended this before?
I recommended the Reg Expert.
Okay, and I recommended Regex 101. In the time between we said that now, I found this regex1.com. And Regex 1 has a really good interactive tutorial that honestly gives you just enough, right? I don't think its goal is to make you into a regex master. But in my opinion, I went through this little tutorial just for fun to see what it did. And it was pretty great. The basic skills that you want, you know, how to select specific text strings and all the things that will make you a more effective regexer. I swear, regex is the one technology that is very difficult for me to learn every single time. I have a regex book, and I swear I can't tell you what page 12 says because I fall asleep at page number 11 every single time I try to read it. I just cannot keep my attention when learning regex. So any interactive tutorials make it much nicer. So if you're learning regex, this is a sponsored transition, by the way. If you're learning regex, you're probably going to write some code that breaks while you're learning it. And you're going to want to make sure you keep track of all of those errors and exceptions. And to do that, you're probably going to be using one of our sponsors, and that is Sentry at sentry.io. Now, Sentry is the error and exception handling tool that is really, it's our tool that we use over here at Syntax. I personally have been using Sentry myself for a long time, highly recommend it. It's definitely a service that keeps my business up and running because it allows you to do some really great things. Besides just keeping track of all of your bugs, you can set up alerts, you can attach those bugs to specific releases to track regressions easily. I have my API and my front end on two separate deploys here so I can keep them separate. And if an issue pops up with either of them, for instance, I'm looking at one right now. Here's this issue that has popped up a couple of times here, and I can see very clearly it's attached to my source map, and I can see that this is an error specifically on one of my mutations files, and it is looks like it's a bug that we introduced somewhat recently here. So what I can do is I can click this link GitHub issue. I can have it create an issue for us in GitHub directly, and then I can go attach it to myself to let everybody know that, hey, I'm going to be fixing this problem now that I have a little bit more idea of what's going on here. So this is some of the key ways that I use Sentry.io in my own personal business. You're going to head to Sentry.io, use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word, and you are going to get 2 months for free. Sentry.io, TASTYTREAT. Okay, let's keep it rolling here. We have so many of these things. Next step is going to be the operating system basics because, hey, we spend a lot of our time in these operating systems, and it's funny just how many people aren't comfortable doing a lot of intermediate things within their operating system, things that maybe, you know, general users will never need to do. So what are some of these key skills that you think you need to have within your operating system, Wes?
I think switching windows, switching through multiple instances of a window. If you have one app, you want to switch to your browser. If you have multiple tabs open, if you have multiple versions of that window, just being able to quickly cycle and switch through those via the keyboard. The amount of times I see people who drag the window out of the way to find the window that is underneath and then drag it back over, it drives me crazy seeing that because it's so inefficient. And you think like, oh, it's not a big deal. But like if you spend 5 seconds moving a window, you do that every couple of minutes, that adds up really, really quickly. So just knowing what the keyboard shortcuts are to switch between apps, to switch between multiple windows of a single app. So if you've got two windows of Chrome open, and then also if you've got 5 or 6 different tabs open, how do you switch to the third tab without having to click it or cycle through them?
If you use macOS, you're missing a key feature that I think makes it really easy to navigate through some of your windows that both Linux and Windows have, which is the ability to quickly and easily snap windows to various positions, whether that's full screen or top or left or right. You know, I have a lot of, there's like a ton of the utilities to do this. I use one called Spectacle, I believe, and I have some keyboard shortcuts set up. If I'm in a window and I want it to snap to the half of the screen on the left, I just hold Option and hit the left arrow. And likewise, if I wanted to snap to the other side, I hit Option and go to the right. If I want it to be in a perfect 16:9 ratio for recording, I hit Option R for recording. You know, it's like little things like this that can make your life so much easier. Your hands never leave the keyboard. Your windows just snap exactly where you want them to be. It looks like there's a couple of new tools out here for this. I haven't used either of these, but one is called Tiles. One's called Magnet. They look like they're pretty neat, and they're all trying to emulate sort of the behavior that exists in Windows. This needed to get baked into macOS like 5 years ago.
Totally. I'm so surprised that it doesn't exist yet. I use a combination of Carabiner, which remaps my caps lock key to be a hyper key, which is...
I should just do that.
The hyper key presses shift, control, option, and command at once because like you have 4 modifier keys, shift, control, option, command, and then you can make modifiers based on any combos of those, but there's unlikely any keyboard shortcuts that are pressing all 4 of those plus R or something. Mm-hmm. So a hyperkey will remap caps lock to that. And then you can do like things like hyper R, or so I have hyper, all the arrows will snap my windows up and down, and Carabiner remaps it. And then I use Better Touch Tool to snap them and move them from monitor to monitor.
Oh, that's what you use is Better Touch Tool.
Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I tried them all. And this was like the best one at the time. And I still like it. And it's just, I don't want to like switch it. It works just fine for me. I'm sure there's other good ones out there.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of what I settled on then. And it's working. So don't mess with it.
I think the reason why I like mine so much is because I can get the snap to 16:9 really quickly.
Yeah.
If any of them else have that, then yeah, I'm not exactly super thrilled with mine.
I'm not sure if Better Touch Tool has that. I think we should get the guy who made Better Touch Tool on the podcast, because he's just like, he just built this Mac app and has millions of features. And like, I'm always curious, like, first of all, how do you keep building this thing and not get burned out? And second of all, how do you, like, it works with the magic mouse and the touch bar and the trackpad, and keyboard shortcuts and Siri remote and gestures. Like, there's so many features in here. And like, whenever a new OS comes out, like, how do you test it all?
Oh, gosh.
And there's just so much to it. And I'm so many questions I have.
That gives me major anxiety.
Totally. Like, this thing it's so low level too. And also, like, if there's an issue with like the trackpad driver, like, you can't just tweet out, is anyone having trouble with the trackpad driver? Because like, yeah, you're one of the very few people in the world that makes an app like this. So it's kind of interesting. Those are well worth your time to learn.
Definitely.
Unzipping files. It's one thing we see a lot on Windows is that when you, I don't know if this is still true or not, but if you have like a folder and you unzip it, it like makes a double folder. Like if you have like a zip file called Wes, and then inside that you have a folder called Wes, then it gives you two folders. And that was a huge source of confusion when I was teaching, because you'd have double folder levels and then the files wouldn't be where people would expect them. File organization. We've talked about this on the podcast before, so I won't talk about that. But just being like having good file hygiene, I talk about a lot, being able to know where the files are on your computer, where you should put them, a place for everything and everything in its place.
Totally. You know what we should add on here is using like the like Alfred type tools. I know there's one that exists for Linux. I don't know what exists like this for Windows, but Alfred is an essential tool for me, for at least Mac OS, to be able to quickly open applications and set up workflows and do all sorts of things. It's definitely a key component of my workflow, especially because it does so many things, like allowing you to just take your hands off of the mouse and use the keyboard specifically.
Searching for files. One thing that I hate on OS X is the Finder. If you want to search for a file,
rough.
It never works. Like, I remember being able to search for like star.txt on Windows, and that little dog would wag his tail and look for it. And that was like probably like 15 years ago, and it still is not as good on OS X. And there are a couple tricks you can do in the search where you can add multiple modifiers and search by type or search in files, but it's not apparent how that works. So spending some time figuring that out is well worth it.
Yeah, I have like some saved filter searches. Like, I have one that just gives me all of the ScreenFlow files on my computer and then sorts them by newest to oldest. So that way, if I'm ever looking for a ScreenFlow file specifically, I don't have to go pawing through everything.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's been nice.
Let's switch to the next one, which is Googling. How to Google well. It seems like a funny thing to do, but often my wife will ask me, like, can you just Google this? Because I can't find what I'm looking for. And then I'll start Googling. And she always laughs. She's like, you're so good at Googling. There are some things you can do to become a better Googler. Like, what are some of your tricks?
It's a skill that is a practiced skill in my mind. But just knowing simply what is an ineffective search. Like, if I wanted to search for something on Gatsby, right? You wanted to say like, Gatsby, this is happening or whatever, like error with Gatsby. What I would do is I would start with the error, copy and paste the error, remove any sort of like your own file system stuff, just paste the basics of the error and see what comes up. Then if nothing comes up, start and say maybe like the behavior. But another thing people tend to do is maybe not realize just how many terms there are with the same word, like oh, Gatsby. Okay, there's the Great Gatsby. There's Gatsby this or Gatsby that. That's totally unrelated to our industry. Gatsby, JavaScript, this, like Gatsby, React, blank. You know, just adding some of those additional qualifiers in can help. If I'm searching for something and I'm getting a lot of bad results, results that I don't want to see, I think, what was the one? I was asking a question the other day on my end. It was about Apex domains. And I wanted to know something specifically about Apex domains and CNAMEs. And every single result that came up on the first page was talking about load balancing. I'm not worrying about load balancing right now. I want to know about DNS. So I used one of the Google operators, which is the minus, and I did the minus load balance, and it removed all of those load balancing things. I can add DNS in there, and it just reduces the clutter. So, man, it's a lot of practice in terms of like knowing what's effective and knowing what's not effective, seeing what's effective, and then getting some of those skills like the operators and skills of actual technical things that exist in Google. I feel like you're the type who has like explicit Google tips.
I like to use date searching a lot. So if you search for something on Google, you don't have to know any keywords or anything, but there's a tools dropdown. You click on tools, and that will allow you to filter for a specific date range. So more often than not, like let's say I'm looking for an issue with Apollo, and Apollo 3 just came out, and I'm Googling for the issue. Well, there's like 4 or 5 years worth of Apollo before then that I need to then filter out, because that is not the library that I'm working with. So you know, okay, well, Apollo just came out, let's say 2 months ago. It's not even out at the time of recording, but let's just say it came out 2 months ago. Then I can filter my listings for things that were posted in the last 2 months. I remember I found a blog post about something X, Y, and Z, and it was about a year ago. So then you want to search in 2019. You can limit it to 2019. That's not going to show you any new stuff that would have come up. And I find that to be super helpful to gauge when stuff was posted.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine getting like a bug with your React hook, and then you Google something about React and all of the errors that pop up on Google are from, you know, like 2017. And you're just like, oh, well, that's not going to be accurate. Another one I like to use if I'm looking for opinions is I'll just add the word Reddit onto there. Now, you got to be careful with Reddit, because definitely people, they definitely have the good opinions occasionally. But what you want is you want a wide variety of opinions. You want a lot of people with personal experience. And that's often a good place to see people talking about their personal experience and opinions with things. But that said, there is that sort of like hive mentality over there. And if you're not paying attention, you can definitely get bad information just as much as you're getting good information there.
Absolutely. Reddit is the best. Take it with a grain of salt, because you could be getting bad information. But in my experience, especially once you get into the much more niche subreddits, you will find a lot more really helpful information. I find some of the bigger ones, web dev and whatnot, a lot of good people in there, but there's a lot of bad opinions and angry people in there as well. So take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Next section is going to be talking about GitHub. We as developers spend a lot of time around GitHub, specifically because that's where so much code lives and hosts issues and all those things. So some of your skills are going to be simply just learning how to navigate GitHub itself. GitHub is a really fantastic skill and a really fantastic place, but it is very intimidating for those of you who may not have a lot of Git skills. I remember when GitHub was first blowing up and I didn't necessarily understand Git. It was confusing to me having to use the terminal in that sort of way, or just even the process of it, you know, the downloading of things. You click download and it gives you a open in desktop or download zip, or here's an HTTPS string. Like, oh, I remember feeling very overwhelmed and just not super confident when navigating GitHub. So it's important to understand and spend the time and figure out where things are. The Explore tab is there for finding interesting projects. The Marketplace is there for finding things like GitHub Actions, which are really great. I've been working a lot with GitHub Actions. For newer developers, you'll just want to spend time navigating around repos and seeing how issues work, realizing what it takes to make a successful issue, right? Just letting someone know that their stuff doesn't work isn't exactly very helpful. That's like a whole skill in its own, is writing a good issue, and one of which that I'm trying to get better at. Understanding what pull requests are, how the whole thing works. Find yourself a good GitHub tutorial that explains everything, where things are at, and how to click through it. I also have a number of GitHub extensions that I'll recommend for those of you using Chrome. Many of these have analogous versions to Firefox as well. I like to use OctoLinker, which gives you that click through to source thing that we were talking about within VS Code. gives you that click through the source on GitHub. So let's say you're browsing a file on GitHub and you want to see the file that it's referencing. You can just click on it as a link and it takes you right to it without you having to go back in the file directory and then forward to that file, or in case it's in a whole nother file directory. Another one that I really love is OctoTree, which gives you a sidebar of a folder structure, sort of like what you have within your text editor, where you can click and open folders. And then that way you can click and go directly to a specific file, or you can even filter and search.
Ooh,
I would, cool. Wes, if you're not using OctoTree, man, you got to get on it. It's fantastic.
That's pretty cool. I find, especially with my beginner JavaScript and my JavaScript 30 course, people aren't totally comfortable with the concepts of a repo, a fork of that repo, and then a branch on either of the repo or the fork. And I get a lot of, oops, I accidentally pull requested you all of my work by accident, because people are trying to push their own work to their own branch or something like that. Find a repo, make with a friend or something like that, and practice forking each other's repos and pull requesting, just so you can get comfortable. Like, I'm not mad at that. It's just that, like, it can be a little bit confusing as to, like, I don't want to accidentally overwrite something, or I don't want to accidentally do the wrong thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Sometimes you push up a DS store file and you're just like, how do I delete? How do I delete file from GitHub? And that's always fun. I think one of the most important things about not only navigating through GitHub is navigating through file structures in general and viewing source. And so this is like a whole nother skill, because it might not necessarily be GitHub. It might just be some source. Maybe you've downloaded it from somewhere. Maybe it's on GitHub and you're just pawing through the folder structures. Maybe it's on GitLab or somewhere else entirely. And so reading source is a skill all into itself. You want to first figure out how to find where a project starts. Like, what's the entry point? And usually you can find that if it's a JavaScript-based package or JavaScript-based project, you can use the package.json. And the package.json usually gives you an entry in saying where this thing starts. Like, where's the initial start file?
Yes, that's a good tip.
If you start at the initial start file, you can see what loads what, what loads what, what loads what. And oftentimes, maybe that start file is just loading another file or loading something else, and that can seem sort of pointless. But it really gives you a handle on the layout and structure of this project in a way that just simply looking at the files can't give you. So just spend a lot of time reading source, because reading source is a skill unto its own. Just being able to look at somebody else's code, read the comments, and pick apart things as to how they go. The last one we're going to be talking about here is knowing when to pick the right dev tool for the job. The dev tools pain is overwhelming to new people. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, Wes?
Yeah, just being able to know where to edit something at a very basic, know, is this CSS based or is this in the elements tab? Those two are very helpful, being able to toggle styles on and off to see if that's your issue. Knowing, does this happen when something is clicked? Then maybe you need to head on in over to the event listeners tab and see what's going on in there. Going into your console and understanding what the errors are in there. Sometimes, especially lately, like Chrome and Firefox put all kinds of garbage in your console that means nothing to you as a developer. Or like, maybe you're developing something, but you have an iframe and you have some stuff being dumped in there. So peruse through the console, know what's important and what's not. And honestly, we don't have any rules for that here. That just takes time, but getting comfortable with it. And then probably a couple of years into your dev journey, you'll start to look at the rest of the tabs, which is things like the network tab, the memory tab, performance tab, storage tab, cookies, things like that.
I often see people go right for the console log sometimes. I myself am definitely a victim of using console log way too many times when it's not appropriate. And just knowing, again, which tab to look at, whether that is, of course, maybe you're going to get more information about that from the network tab than you'd get from doing a console log. Or maybe you're console logging eight things and it would just make more sense to throw a debugger in there and see the entire stack context of everything that you're looking at in one fell swoop. Or maybe it's just like understanding what tools you can use to modify the CSS or HTML the correct way. A lot of these things, again, is just, it's a part of this is experience. But again, find yourself a good developer tools course or blog post, or just spend the time looking at them. Because let me tell you, there's not that many tabs for no reason. They all have very specific use cases. And
yeah,
some of them definitely are used more than others, but they all have very excellent use cases for your skills.
All right. So that is the leftovers of the fundamentals that we have for you. Hopefully you learned a few things here or there of things that maybe you should focus on. Obviously, there's a lot here, but maybe take one or two things and say, I'm going to get better at the command palette, or I'm going to learn five new terminal commands in the next month or two. And that's probably well worth your time.
Totally.
Let's move into some sick picks. I have a really good sick pick today, and this is something that I got from my grandma. So my grandma is in a nursing home, and she's not able to have visitors, and she didn't have the internet or email or anything like that. She actually had email maybe 15 years ago. I remember emailing her when I was just had a Hotmail address, but she hasn't had email in probably 10, 12 years or something like that. So we, all of the cousins and everything, got her an iPad and set her up with internet at the nursing home. And the one problem she has is that her arthritic fingers, she can't move them fast enough. And she always triggers things that are too quick. She makes the icons jiggle because she held down, she force pressed on some of the icons. And it's a little bit frustrating to her to do it. So what we ended up doing is I bought her this thing called the Cosmonaut Wide Grip Stylus.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I got that from my dad for different reasons. I just thought it was cool.
Oh, awesome. So it's
very nice.
It's a big marker. It's like gripping a Sharpie or something like that. Instead of her sort of shaky hands, she's able to have a little bit more control on that. And so your dad tried it. He thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's weighted. It feels really nice. It feels good.
Yeah.
I got it from him a number of years ago for his first iPad. And just because I thought he wanted a stylus and I thought it was really neat. And it's a very good product. Very nice.
It's one of these Kickstarter things. Grab it on studioneat.com. I'll put a link in the show notes as well. Big fan.
Cool. I'm going to sick pick initially a TV, I don't want to call it a limited series, what it would be a four-parter limited series. This was on Nova maybe in 2011. And granted, some of the information has since been not updated, but for instance, they talk about the Higgs boson particle, which has since been discovered, actually observed, right? And so this is called The Fabric of the Cosmos. And Courtney was watching the rocket launch and asking me some questions about how satellites work and how, gravity works. And this stuff is mind-blowing. It's so mind-blowing. And I said, listen, I can explain to you how this all works with fabric and bowling balls and whatever. But let me just put on this four-part series for you, which is a little bit of an investment. And let's just watch this together and blow your mind. Because it's based on the book by Brian Greene does this. He's fantastic. It's based on a book by the same name by Brian Greene. I've also read the book because I found this video series to be so fantastic. I've been a huge Brian Greene fan ever since this. But it's so good. It talks a lot about theoretical physics. It talks about actual observed physics. And it talks about space-time and how things are connected and warped via all sorts of things with black holes and the theoretical physics of things like time travel or how time is connected to space in a way where, just simply changing your speed actually affects time, right? We don't often think about these things. And we watched the first one. I've seen all of these 100 times, but we watched the very first one on just space itself, empty space. And not outer space, but empty space and what that actually is. And when we got done watching it, Courtney was just saying, man, I feel like everyone should watch this stuff because you would realize just how insignificant a lot of the things we worry about are. It was just fantastic. So I'm going to be watching the other three of these with her over the next few days. It's my favorite video series. I love it a lot. It's from 2011, but it's still very, very fantastic. Very much holds up today.
Awesome. That's good. Shamelessly plug my courses, westboss.com/courses. If you want to learn something new with JavaScript, HTML, CSS, check it out. westboss.com/courses. Use coupon code syntax for $10 off.
Yep. I'm going to shout out my courses, leveluptutorials.com. You can sign up for the entire year right now and save 50% off. leveluptutorials.com/pro.
Beauty, thank you so much for tuning in, and we will catch you on Monday.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.